listening to New England Public Radio News, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And with us today, Ron Chmielis, columnist with the Springfield Republican newspaper, and Matt Szafranski, editor of Western Mass Politics and Insight. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
As you've probably heard by now, State Senator Stan Rosenberg of Amherst has resigned. Rosenberg faced mounting pressure to leave after a scathing Senate report came out. It alleges he demonstrated poor judgment and failed to protect the Senate from his husband, Brian Hefner, who faces sexual assault and other charges. Rosenberg gave up the Senate presidency months ago as news of the scandal broke. Ron, did Rosenberg make the right choice giving up the Senate seat that he had held since 1991?
Well, I think it's the right choice. I have to admit I was surprised a little because we've become so used to seeing politicians try to hang on until they absolutely have to be forced out. And he could have stayed till the end of his term, perhaps tried to run again, but he didn't do that. I think it was necessary, and I think he made the right decision.
Matt?
Well, I agree with Ron there. I think what really made it difficult was, you know, A, he wouldn't have had any type of leadership position, which is rare for a Democrat in the Senate. You know, there's so few, I mean, the Senate's smaller, so they can all have some kind of role. And the other thing was is that there was a trust factor. I mean, he said, you know, some news reports said that he felt betrayed by his colleagues, but on the other hand, I think they felt that way too because they were promised a firewall and didn't get one.
And could that betrayal have been in Rosenberg's mind, at least, been demonstrated by the blanket apology that the Senate released to the victims and others that were affected after Rosenberg handed in his resignation yesterday?
Yeah, I think that was part of it. I think that I think some of it was a degree of responsibility because it wasn't like all senators or no other senator knew nothing about this, but. I think that part of it was that they felt that he didn't do enough for them as well in this.
Ron, what did you think about that blanket apology? That was kind of an interesting move by the Senate.
Well, I think it reflects the times that people now want to be known as on the right side of this whole issue of sexual harassment. And also in the Rosenberg case, I think this does draw a line and says the answer of I didn't know is not good enough anymore. That's just not going to fly anymore. And I think we're going to see other cases of this down the road. It's inevitable that people say, well, how was I supposed to know what my partner, my friend, my associate was doing? They're going to have to know to some degree.
Going back to the report, it did include some head scratchers. For instance, Rosenberg did not follow a Senate policy of sharing email passwords, but apparently did not break any formal rules either. Matt, do those rules need to be revisited?
Well, I know that there's some discussion of that. You know, there is in the rules as well a power of the council of the Senate to mete out punishment beyond what might be a direct violation. I think they might be looking at maybe requiring certain policies to be considered part of the rules, maybe as like an appendix. You know, because there the questions about violating IT policy. It sounds technical, but it does matter. It's a security issue.
Ron, does the Senate need to tighten things up?
You know what bothers me? The answer is probably yes, but integrity should not have to be written down in every T crossed and every I dotted and everything have to be on a piece of paper or in law. Integrity should be understood, and there were some things that clearly, when you look at this case, the understanding was ignored. I'd hate to think that has to be written into law, but I wonder.
In other news, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker will face a primary challenge from within his own party as he runs for a second term this fall. Springfield Minister Scott Lively received more than 27% of the votes at the state Republican Party convention last weekend. Lively, who ran for governor as an independent in 2014, is a Trump supporter and has a fiercely anti-gay track record. Matt, are you surprised Lively attracted so much support at the state convention?
No, not at all. I think that the Republicans in Massachusetts have been lucky that they have not endured the same takeover of their far right fringe that the National Party has. And what you're seeing here is a reflection of that. It's also the fact that the centrist, moderate, whatever wing tends to be, I think, dismissive and assumes that the far right will support them under all circumstances. And they don't like being treated like that.
Ron, is it possible that the presence of Lively in the race could actually make Baker more appealing to Democratic voters down the line?
I want to see how he handles this, because if he tries to win over Lively's support within his own party, he could antagonize some Democrats who have looked at him as very moderate and sympathetic to most of what they stand for, especially on social issues. So I'm waiting to see how he handles this, because this is a very significant challenge. I don't think Lively will beat him, but he'll force him to campaign and make position statements that he otherwise wouldn't have had to make.
Matt, should this make Baker sweat at all, having a challenge from within his own party?
I mean, in two very simple ways. One is that he's going to have to spend money that he'd much rather, you know, dump in the general election to remind voters how much they love him. But I think the other aspect is that it creates... It exposes that tension I was talking about before. You know, I mean, this is something the Republicans don't want to talk about in Massachusetts. They want you to think that they're at worst Rockefeller Republicans, at best New Republicans, whatever. And to have these kind of fights get litigated is exactly the opposite of what they want in the public to be talking about.
Also this week, a recent poll from Western New England University came out, and it says some Springfield residents are feeling more positive about their hometown. Compared to a similar poll conducted 8 years ago, fewer people see public safety as the city's biggest issue, and more folks see Springfield as an excellent or good place to live. And 59% think Springfield's economy will be better 5 years from now. Ron, what do you make of all of these numbers?
Well, I think it's becoming fashionable where it hadn't been before to say things are okay, or at least they're getting better. That was not a fashionable thing to say. If you said that a few years ago, I think you were accused of being a Pollyanna, a Chamber of Commerce lackey, whatever. But today, people look at a variety of things happening, and it's not to say everything's hunky-dory and perfect. We know that's not true. But there are positive signs, and people are becoming more willing to recognize that.
Matt, when it comes to fighting crime, more Springfield residents today think the city is doing a good job compared to 2010. But the poll finds a difference when it comes to race and ethnicity. Half of white respondents say the city is doing a fair or poor job. That number goes well up among Hispanic and black residents. What do city leaders need to do to bridge that gap?
Well, I think there's two things here. One is that there is a tendency to put a lot of police resources into the better off areas of the city, which tend to be whiter. And that's not to say that they're completely ignoring the other areas, or when there's a, you know, a shooting or something, that they're not paying attention to that. But it does create a perception of policing as being better in certain areas than it is in others, especially when crime is already low there. And the other thing is that they do need to address some of the concerns among the black and Hispanic communities, that they are being policed properly, not over-policed, and that civil rights complaints are being properly addressed.
Ron, I'll give you the last word on that.
Well, I agree with what Matt says, and I think they got to talk. They have to continue a dialogue, and a hard dialogue, not something that either side necessarily wants to hear entirely.
It has to be ongoing.
It has to be ongoing. It has to be honest, and I think that will chip away at some of this mistrust over time.
Ron Chmielewski of the Springfield Republican newspaper and Matt Szafranski of Western Mass Politics and Insight, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of the Shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.